Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 13th, 2013. You're listening to the best poker cast on Terra Firma. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long, and I need to find the thesaurus here.
Well, I'm just glad to be on solid ground, buddy.
Is Terra Firma some kind of new energy drink or something?
I have to admit, when we were on the ship, everything was going so smoothly, and you looked at me and you're like, dude, unless the ship goes down in the ocean somewhere, this is the smoothest cruise we've ever had. And I said, I am not saying anything until we are both at home doing the show. And I know it was a success. So here I am saying something. It was really a great cruise.
Yeah. It's really that second shoe, I guess, is supposed to fall, right?
Yeah.
That's the saying. It never fell. So it's still hanging somewhere on the ship.
Though there was a funny moment that worried the hell out of all of us. We're getting off the ship, and I take my card, and they check me out, and it goes, da-doing, and then you get up there, and you do the card, and it goes, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. The whole place is like, the guy grabs the little, you know, the little black stretchy cord thing and pulls it across and says, okay, there's a barrier here. No one can advance until we figure this out. And I'm like, what, if Scott didn't pay his bar bill? What's going on, you know? And then the guy's like, are you Mr. Long? And Scott's like, yeah. Oh, hang on. We got to get guest services here. I'm like, oh, Scott, you didn't pay your bar bill. You're hanging us up now. They're here. Now we're going to have the problem, you know. And then about 10 minutes later, Jean now, by the way, is like five people behind you waiting to get off. And she didn't do anything wrong. She wants to get off the ship. And I'm sitting there off the ship. And we're like stuck in limbo. So then about 10, 15 minutes later, someone comes down. They're like, you, Scott? And you're like, yeah. And you're like, come with me. And then he like kind of like grabs your arm or something, or and I'm like, what's going on? And then we're going across the gangway and I'm all nervous, and he won't tell us why he wants you. We go all the way down to customs, won't tell us why he wants you, and I'm like, what did we do? We didn't do anything wrong. We're doing everything perfectly legal. And then the customs comes over, and then they're like, you the poker guys? And Scott was so quick to say, yeah, the three of us. You know, he didn't want to just say, he was taking me down with him. Don't ever think Scott will take a bullet for you if you're ever in a back alley, because he won't. He'll jump right behind you. So, yeah, I'm like, yeah, we're all together. We're all run the cruise, you know, thing. And he's like, yeah, we just want to see, how do you want to get your tables? And I'm like, oh, shoot. Thank you. So really, it wasn't a hassle. I mean, it took a couple minutes to get somebody to get the stuff for us, but really, what a great, everybody at Tampa was so good with the ship, with the group coordinator. Everything was so good. I couldn't believe how nice it went. It was so smooth.
Yeah, you know, when the little bell went off of the card, I'm like, you know what? They know I got a tattoo. Apparently, right. I didn't check it on my customs form. Apparently, I'm like, oh, my God, am I not allowed to bring ink back from Mexico now?
That's right. You did not return the same way you left, pal. I got to tell you, I'd like to know what people have been saying to you about it, because I have my own family here that they all just loved hearing the story, and they've got some particular things they want to say to you. So I'd like to hear what you have to say first, see what people said to you, and then I'll tell you what's been happening on my end. But so what's it been like?
I would say, first of all, the most important person's opinion is refusing to acknowledge that it exists.
Oh, wow.
So it's not been a happy home here for the last week.
Wow. I wondered about that.
Apparently a little impulsive on my part. I didn't really think about that. Of course, you don't think about that when you're being impulsive, I guess, because that's the whole purpose of being impulsive,
that
right?
That would not be impulsive, right?
But the mild curiosity elsewhere, I believe, would be probably the proper term.
My family said, no way. And I said, yeah. This is basically how it went with everyone I told in my family. No way. Are you kidding me? I said, yeah, no. And they go, the next thing they say is, where'd he get it? And then I point to where he got it. And then they say, well, why didn't he just get a tramp stamp? Because it's just as bad. I'm like, what? Like, are you serious? A grown man got a tattoo on his hip? And I'm like, yeah, I know. And then, no, but you, and they said, you know what you need to do? You need to record everyone's reaction when you tell them where he got it, and then put it in a video, and then put it on your website or mail it to Scott so he can see how everyone you're telling reacts to him getting a tattoo on his hip. And I said, I know. He's like, he wanted to hide it. I mean, he could put it, you know, under his arm. And I'm like, I'm sure that was too delicate for Scott. And they're like, so we just going back and forth. But the biggest thing was they just couldn't believe where you got it. Not that you got it, but where you got it, which I thought was interesting. I really thought it would be more like, wow, he really branded himself, you know. But no, it was more, I can't believe you got it there.
Yeah, I find that interesting because, you know, obviously I've never wanted a tattoo. I've always thought it was kind of ridiculous because it's permanent.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she says, woohoo, Mexico, let's have fun. And I'm like, woohoo, let's not have too much fun. Let's be sure it's somewhere that's, you know, not going to impede my future political aspirations. So, but, you know, I was at the dinner with my mom the first night, and she's like, all right, so where'd you get it? And I'm like, Mexico. And Laura kicks me, and she's like, that's not what she means.
That's the old joke, you know. I kissed her. Well, where'd you kiss her? And then they're like, Mexico. You know, no, that's not what I meant. So, but, you know, we do have a couple of people, you know, like, who are all happy for you in on my. They're like, well, that's great. You know, that's cool. And they're like, did you get one? I'm like, no. You know, I was like, no, I didn't get one. Sorry. But I was surprised.
Jenny said she'd get one, though, so you better believe I'm going to be working that angle.
Yeah, but not the Annie Up A. She's going to get a tattoo, but not the Annie Up tattoo. That's for sure. But we had someone call in and react to this, which I thought was very interesting. Let's hear that.
Hey guys, this is Eric calling from Canada. While we're on the subject of tattoos, I have an excellent marketing opportunity for Anti-Up. You see, I will get the Anti-Up logo tattooed on my body in exchange for one free Anti-Up cruise ticket a year. And I'll get Chris's face tattooed next to it if you provide a ticket for my wife. I'll get Scott's face on me as well if Scott's wife gets a ticket too. So hit me up. Let me know what you think.
Oh, he's throwing down the gauntlet there, Chris.
Wow. Yeah, that's a remarkable offer.
Yeah, so a couple things. One, he shot me an email afterwards and said, hey, my wife's reaction to my calling the hotline was probably very similar to your wife's reaction when she found out that you got a tattoo. So we are now both dumbasses. But here's the thing. I think he made a major error, and I hate saying this to a good friend and a fellow former Anti-Up cruiser. Playing my wife gets to go free card.
You think that's a mistake?
Yeah, because she gets to go free as it is without any tattoo, so...
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So he'd be decimating his little body for nothing.
Yeah, right? For absolutely nothing.
Desecrating it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know...
I would think it's kind of weird that he would go for your face before my face.
I know, that's what I was saying. I don't know what he was thinking saying my face. I would think that he'd want your face, since you're his hero now with the tattoo thingy. So
see, this is why I never do anything impulsive, because it comes back to bite you like this. Yeah, you know, yeah. You just got on the hotline and called, wasn't thinking about what he was doing, just in the moment, having fun, and now he probably regrets it.
Yeah, yeah. The good thing is, though, is his isn't permanent yet. Yours is always going to be there unless you decide to take it off.
It's on the show. It will always be there now.
It's on the show.
You can't get that stuff off the
internet. That's right. That's right. Radio waves right now are sending it to Saturn, and some alien life force will actually hear it someday and come and ask them if you got the tattoo or not. But I'd like to see my face on a skin or something, see what it looks like.
On another guy's hip?
Not on a guy, but, I mean, you know, on his arm or something. You know, it doesn't have to be a guy. It could be anybody, but... That'd be kind of weird to see your face.
Well, I mean, he's not offering to put it on his wife. He's offering to put it on himself. So.
No, I know. I didn't say his wife. I was, you know, his arm.
I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
The offer right now is on him.
Oh, yeah. I know. I just meant I want to see it on skin. I wonder what your face looks like on skin. You know, I never. But I know if we took him up on it, he would not do it.
I know what my face looks skinned up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I went through the windshield once when I was like 19. That was what it looked. But really, though, I mean, how I
feel this last week.
If we were in position to do that, though, to offer people cruises for tattoos, do you think they really would do it?
I think some would absolutely do that.
Yeah. Well, we aren't in position to do that, so...
Don't get crazy.
There's no way we could afford to do that, but I would love to see somebody do that. I couldn't believe you guys did it. I thought that was pretty wild. And like I said, we told the story already, so I don't want to tell it again, but I just could not believe that you did it. And then that it, you know, hats off to you, buddy. Hats off.
Hey, you know, I go to no lengths for the company. Well, but, you know, we are making cruises available for free, though. Are we not?
We are.
No tattoos required.
I was going to say someone else made a commitment, but you wanted to go in a different direction with it, and that's cool. So we are very excited, and we have more coming up, too, we think. So stay tuned for those as well. But Caesar's Palace Las Vegas is going to add a Los Angeles Antioch cruise package to the prize pool of its January 18th Winter Poker Classic main event. That's pretty cool. It's the first time Caesars and us are getting together from Las Vegas, so hope it's the start of a beautiful friendship. We're happy for that to be happening. And also, Snoqualmie Casino near Seattle is holding 10 drawings for the same cruise, the Los Angeles one, which goes to the Mexican Riviera, in January and February. Our good friend Elliot Schechter up there, who's actually going to be on that cruise as well with us dealing, so that's going to be a really good time, and our first time out of Los Angeles, so that's pretty exciting. And then they just keep pouring in, right? Running Aces near Minneapolis. They're going to make the Galveston, Texas Antioch Poker Cruise package the prize in their free rolls on December 16th and December 30th, January 6th and January 20th. And then they're going to run $225 satellites on January 26th. It's just amazing. All these guys are getting on board. They really want to see our cruises do well and reward their players. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, please go out and support those rooms, because this is always a big commitment for them to send players on our cruises, and we appreciate it.
That's right.
And don't forget that Wendover Nugget, Pearl River Resort, and Rounders Poker Club are already doing giveaways, so details on all of these giveaways can be found at andyfcruises.com, including details on the cruises. And just a last reminder that we only have staterooms in our control for the Los Angeles cruise through January 7th, and I would not be surprised if they go before then. So
yes,
do not wait to the last minute. We are very close to signing a deal to get it's going to wipe out most of the remaining cabins. So yeah. Call soon. Operators are standing by.
It really is true. We're not being salesmen. I mean, we're very close to having somebody grab up all the cabins. So please, if you're going to come with us, we want to see you out there and book it. So, you know, one of the things that was disappointing about the cruise, though, there was one thing, is that we didn't get to play like a dealer's choice ho or something. Because everybody wanted to play their own game, and that was great, and believe me, I'm going to turn down me playing for everyone else playing. So, but one of the things I really wanted to try to call, and I even thought about calling it in Doc's home game before we went on the cruise, is that Courchevel game. And I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it. I could even be wrong. I don't know. Courchevel, I don't know.
I am in no position to tell you that you're wrong.
Yeah, I don't know, but
ever.
I do love the game. And when we were playing in the home game, I did call 5-card Omaha, you know, or Big O. Some people like to call it Big O. You know, I played it PLO. I liked that game, but I liked Courchevel better. And I didn't know if we should have just talked about my experience with it, or if maybe we would do a show on it, but it's pretty simple. If you know how to play Omaha, then you know how to play Courchevel. It's just whether or not your strategy will work out, because there's one twist in Courchevel. Instead of you getting 5 cards and then there's a flop and then a turn and a river, as they're dealing out the cards, everyone gets their cards and then they turn over one card on the flop already. They don't wait until all the betting. So you are dealt all your cards and then they put one out to tease you to say, okay, this is going to be the first card of the flop. Now do your betting. And it hooks a lot of people. I mean, it gets a lot of people involved. But for me, I mean, I do use it for that
as
well.
It's like having X-ray vision, isn't it?
It is like that, except everybody has it, so you're not really getting any benefit out of it.
Well, that's true. It doesn't make really that much of an advantage.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal. But I do think that it hooks enough suckers to stick around. And if you play it properly, I think that you really can benefit from this game, playing the right strategy. For me, you know, if I knew that it gave me a set, obviously, I'm playing it. Or, you know, if I had the nut flush draw to a certain suit and that suit came out, I might play it. But, you know, straight cards and everything, unless I had a wrap in my hand that it hit right dead smack in the middle of it or something, yeah, that's not going to keep me from playing it. But I got to tell you, you have a round of betting then. Then they do the rest of the flop, two cards. You have a round of betting then. Mm-hmm. And then you have the turn, round of betting, and river, round of betting. So I have to say now, I realize again that, you know, my only experience in all these new games that I've been talking about and then these new experiences and stuff are strictly from play on the PokerStars app. But I just loved this game, and I don't know if anybody ever knew of this game who didn't have this app or who weren't a foreign listener, foreign correspondent for Annie Up or whatever, because I've never heard of it in America, but I know that it's popular in like Europe or whatever, or at least that's where it originated or whatever. So I love this game. I crushed it when I played it. Not again. Now I know it's play money, obviously, but you know you could still lose. You know. But it's just it totally mixes it up. And there's always been, there's not one person who plays Hold'em or Omaha who hasn't said to themselves, if I only knew at least what one card was, you know, I would know where I'm going with this hand or whatever. And now here's your chance, you know, and it's like, you know, you sort of know the top card without having to mark the deck and have the burn because, you know what I mean? You'll know the card. And It's puts you that much closer to making a decision, and I like that. I like having that little bit of extra information, kind of like stud when you see the one card up for everybody before you decide to play your hand or not. And it was pretty cool. And until I brought it up though, had you ever heard of Carcheval?
Yeah, I was gonna say a couple things. One, I thought I told you, but maybe I didn't. But when I was up one of those crazy road trips up through DC, and I spent the night with pizza boy Tom Turley. We were supposed to go to his home game after the baseball game, where they play that every night. And he says the game gets really big because of that. Is that that extra card is just such an action driver, and I was wiped out from traveling that entire day that I had to like say sorry, man. But I was really bummed because I wanted to play it. I had never actually played it. I haven't got the app or anything. So and that was the first time I had actually heard about it. And as soon as he told me about it, you know, my mind, I'm instantly hooked. Because then again, I love Omaha. So that leads me to my second question. You are not an Omaha fan.
No, I'm not.
Never have been. Never will be. So I think it's interesting that you're so excited about this.
Well, you know, I do like PLO.
I mean, I understand why you should be excited about it, but...
I do like PLO. I just don't like PLO 8. So, for me, I just felt like it's silly. But I don't mind actual Omaha. Like, if we played straight-up Omaha Limit in the home game without 8, I would play that all day long. I wouldn't even play any other games. I love Omaha. I just don't like the split part of it. I mean, and it's weird because I like stud 8. You know? But I don't like to think. I don't like to lose half of my pot because somebody just happened to get lucky or, you know, whatever. But I feel like there's a lot more, and I'm probably wrong, and you'll probably tell me so, but I feel like there's a lot more strategy in stud 8 than there is in Omaha 8. And so, you know, and it's a lot more work in stud 8 that you get rewarded for if you're doing it properly than you do in Omaha 8. But that being said, yes, I do love this game, and they have a Carcheval 8, which I played. I crushed that too, but again, it's play money, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't really mean anything. I'm sure if I played against my friends, you guys, and everything, that I wouldn't crush. So, but it was very interesting to see how many people would play it, or how they would play it, or what they would stick around with. Like if you had ace deuce and a 3 came on the flop, you were going nowhere,
right?
You know, on that one card or whatever. People were probably just putting it all in if they could. You know what I mean? They sure thought, well, here I'm 3 to the nut low. And so it's just an interesting game, and I wanted to bring it to the nation's attention just because I thought that, you know, if you never heard of it, it's a cool game to introduce into your home game, because not very many people would think of, hey, let's turn one face up and then keep playing, you know, or whatever. Now, it would be even more interesting.
I know exactly who would bring it up.
Who would bring it up?
A little action junkie player who's tapping his arm there at the table saying, PLO just isn't doing it for me anymore. And they're like, last time you said we added a fifth card. I'm like, I know, I'm tapping my arm. I need more. Give me more. What more can we do? Hey, what if we turn a card over? Yes, that's it. And I guarantee you those people are tapping their arm still. So they're going to come up with some other crazy thing in the next 30 to 60 days. And eventually, any game that's a 1-2 game is really going to be a 1,000, 2,000 game. Because that's what happens here. I don't think people realize this. I mean, we talked about this on the cruise a little bit because we got 1-2-PL logo on a couple nights at least on the cruise. And, you know, talking to our program manager, he's like, you know, I really don't want to spread it on our cruise. Not that we don't want to make people happy. Obviously, people want to steal it and we have enough people, we're going to spread it. But I don't want to spread it because I think people don't realize how big that game gets.
Yeah, it does get.
You know, it's not a 1-2-no limit. They're completely different. You know, at least it's a 2-5 no limit equivalent, and probably bigger, just because of the draws and stuff. And, you know, I don't want to bankrupt all my players on one night and have one guy walk around the cruise ship with everybody's money, which makes perfect sense to me. But, you know, I bring it up, not for that, but I bring it up to just remind folks that every time you add one of these wrinkles, you turn the game into more of an action game. It's a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. I would love to play it. But you also have to keep in mind your bankroll, what that does to your bankroll. Because you just said it, you know, if you have ace, deuce, and a three comes there, I mean, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So that means you're going to get it in, and that low is not going to always get there. So, you know, and the pots are going to be big, and it's going to be great if you hit a couple and win. It's going to be devastating if you don't. So just keep that in mind in the limits you're playing in your home game.
And make sure you know that you're playing Courchevel 8. Or not Courchevel.
Exactly.
Because I did that recently in the home game and lost like 30 to 50 bucks because I thought we were playing the low and we weren't. I'm just an idiot. But yeah, I got to tell you, it's a fun game. Give it a shot in your home game and let us know what you guys think and maybe if you have a strategy for it. I'm sure we'll be talking about it again someday in the future, especially if we do call it in our home game. So, all right, our listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emailed us at podcast@nayupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, the creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. This comes from Stuart Morgan in the UK. And I'm glad I'm reading it because I think you paid a lot of attention to this when he was there. Jonathan Little, when he was on our cruise, gave a bet sizing sort of segment in his little course, and you took that like you know, like a fish to water. So here's what Stuart had to say. He says, "I'm a UK listener, having been playing since 2003. And was genuinely thrilled to discover such a strong weekly podcast." Hey, thanks. Aww. He didn't really say it was us, but
yes, sir.
I'm gonna assume he meant us there.
He's like, but no one else will respond to my email. So.
So I'm just sending it to everybody. Viral. So I'd like to focus on your cruise ship podcast in the spring when you related Jonathan Little's views on bet sizing and generally agreed his methodology was sound. I would add a twist to that, which I picked up recently from my reading and has definitely improved my results. I don't think it's too controversial to state that the earlier you are to act, the better your starting hand requirements should be. However, most people always stick to the same bet size, whether their preference is 2.5 or 3x, etc., whatever their position. Since you will have a stronger hand in early and mid positions, you should increase your bet. There are two reasons for this. Firstly, you want to build a big pot with a big hand, and a larger bet size helps do this. Second, the earlier you are to act, the more players you need to force through to narrow the field, and it needs a larger bet to do this. I was worried about making the change since it seems very transparent, but it has proved very effective, leaving me with bigger hands in more narrowed fields with bigger pots. So go ahead. I do have something to say, but you go first.
All right. Firstly, I want to say I love the word firstly. I can't wait to our transatlantic cruise coming up in May, and we're getting off in London. I'm working on my English right now. Love it. No, I don't think there's anything wrong with this. It's obviously working for him. I haven't talked to Jonathan about this particular email, so I don't want to speak for him. But what I would say, based on my understanding of Jonathan's class, is that the reason that he was doing the 2.5x rather than 3x is that it allows you to see more flops cheaply, and it but at the same time it's raised big enough to get people to get the action that you need. So using that thought process, I think making your bet bigger and earlier position is somewhat counter to it. Now, all that being said, this is kind of the argument we get in on the show all the time with our listeners and stuff, is whatever you're doing pre-flop, as long as you follow through with it on post-flop, then it doesn't really matter. So, in my mind, I've really, as you said, I took like fish to water with this thing. I really like the fact that he taught me this, and I'm doing it. And it's funny now because I watch at the tables, and I see the other people that do bet sizing the way that he does and I do now, mm-hmm. and the way that people are still doing the traditional 3X that all of us learned from, you know, Poker for Dummies or whatever. Right. And so that's interesting. But I like it. Again, I think you need to be disciplined enough to know that, you know, when I'm raising under the gun 2.5X, as Stuart says, it's not going to relate to narrowing the field as much as a 3X, 4X, 5X bet would do. So in my mind, I know I'm not trying to do that. What I'm trying to do is keep a consistent bet size regardless of my position, and know that I'm getting into that flop. I'm getting to see more flops. So, you know, obviously it hurts when I have pocket aces and I'm not raising more, but at the same time, it's mitigated by the fact when I'm raising with 7-5 of clubs that I'm only raising with 2.5X instead of 3X. So it averages out. And then you just remember on the flop, you know, if you raise 2.5X with pocket aces under the gun and you got 5 callers, you know, at that point that you got to tread cautiously on the flop because you got too many people in the hand. So as long as you're disciplined enough to do that, I don't think it's a big deal. But obviously what Stuart's doing is working for him, and it makes sense, you know. And the fact that if he keeps the bets consistent based on his position at the table, then he's still hiding, you know, concealing his hands a little bit. That'd be the other concern. But if it's working for him, great. You know, the bottom line, if it works for you, do it.
So the one thing I will say is I remember reading the Full Tilt Tournament Strategy Guide, and it was Chris Ferguson who was mentioning that when he's under the gun or under the gun plus one, he would make it 2.5. And if he was further along, like the cutoff or the button, he would make it 3 or 4 or even 5X. And the reason he did it was because if you're raising under the gun, you're expected to have big hands, one. But what he was saying is that you want someone to play with you when you have the big hand. You don't want to lose that opportunity. Yeah. And then later on, you want to put the pressure on people who have random hands, and you want to take it down. And if not, you have position, and you did take control of the hand. So, yeah, I don't disagree with Stewart's thing, because I don't necessarily follow what Ferguson does. I'm just saying that Ferguson is direct conflict of what he's saying, and it's something to wonder why. If someone so successful like Ferguson is out there doing it that way, you have to wonder why he's doing it, and that's his reasoning, I think. So, and the other thing, too, is that do you wonder if someone would call more likely with 2.5 instead of 3 or 4X? And mm-hmm. if they do, are you losing more pots because you're getting more random cards calling? If you are losing pots instead of winning more pots, are you losing more money that way? Instead of the money you save by making it 2.5, should you make it 3 order? I don't know. I wouldn't think there's any really one way to test that or not, but it's something to think about, too, that if you're letting people get in for cheap, they might be hitting more pots than they would if you were making them pay more. I know you realize you're saving some money by doing it 2.5, but, you know, like every 10 bets, you're saving 5 bets or something. But to me, it just, you could be risking more money by
well you are and only if you don't have a loose enough starting hand range,
right?
You know, if you're a tight player and you know you're going to be a tight player, then I don't think that Jonathan would advocate this strategy for okay. you, because it's not going to work for you. Yeah. You know, you're not going to get people out with the smaller bet pre-flop, and you're not going to be able to mitigate it because you're not going to be making that raise with lesser hands enough to get the benefit out of it.
Right.
So if you know in your mind that hey, I can't pull the trigger on raising with 7-5 suited, I just can't do it, then you're probably better off making your opening bet size 4X or something bigger, so you are protecting those big hands. Obviously, you're a little bit more transparent at that time, but that way you're playing those big hands heads up and trying to get your money that way. I mean, to make this other thing work, I think you do have to have a pretty wide starting range, depending on the position, obviously. I mean, I don't think he's advocating that you raise under the gun with 7-5 suited all the time, though once in a while is probably fine. But you have to be able to raise with that kind of hand to be able to play this 2.5X.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. And I do, I still, even though it is the ABC Poker for Dummy stuff, I still advocate doing the same bet all the time. You know, whether it is 3X or not. But I mean, if you're not doing the same bet all the time, there's got to be a reason why. And once they figure out that reason why, you're dead. So if you're going to do it 5X under the gun, that's fine. If that's what works for you, but always do it. Otherwise, people are going to start figuring out why you're not always doing it. So
yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing, too, about the 2.5, I would say right now, too, is sometimes because you're doing that more often, because you're betting that you've got a wider starting hand range, right? So you're entering more pots than you normally would. I've noticed in a couple tournaments that it kind of loosens some other people up. Not so much where they're going to raise, but that they're going to call because they're going to know if I come in, it's only going to cost them 2.5x instead of 3, which really isn't that big a deal, to be honest.
Yes.
So you end up getting more people calling in there. And then once you train the table, and I really think of it as that way, at some tables I'm training the table to come along with me. Then that's when I really like the fact that when you're in position and you get a couple limpers or people making these same things, and then you make that legitimate big raise on the button. Let's say you have 4 or 5 callers in, you know, you add all that money plus what you would normally do. That becomes a substantial bet there where people just can't call.
Yeah.
And then you pick up a lot of dead money there. And if you do get a caller, you've got one hand, one player usually against you, and then you can usually outplay them on the flop because you can represent almost anything that comes on that flop. If it's a big hand, then you can represent it. If it's a smaller hand, it might have hit what you were squeezing with. So it does loosen the table up a little bit, which I think you can use to your advantage.
Well, the 2.5x raise number works for me because I can't figure out what 2.5x is. I can't do the math that quick, but I can do 3 times. So 2.5,
but
I'm like,
I
carry the 4.
Do 2.5. I do it kind of odd chips, you know, so it's not really obvious. Like, you know, if it's, 100, 200, I'll make it 500, sometimes 450, you know, whatever the chips are. I don't do it the exact. Necessarily the exact thing because it gets a little too confusing at that point. Plus, if I'm at a table, you know, like a charity event too. I mean, last thing you want to do is put in bets of like 375 or something like that. That just blows people's minds.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is it? I mean, how many greens do I need? Like,
you're already waiting too long for them to put antes in. You don't need to be worrying about them calling 375. All right, speaking of calling, call the floor. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This comes from our good friend, Doc Frank Toscano. He says, I'm playing 1-1 no limit hold'em in a Florida card room. One player was all in pre-flop, creating a small side pot for me and the remaining player with chips. After the flop, my remaining opponent says, all in, but doesn't push his chips across the line. I say call and table my hand, as do the two remaining players. The board runs out and my hand holds up. Then the dealer pushes me the main pot and the $6 side pot. The second all-in opponent gets up out of his chair, still holding his stack of chips, and makes a beeline for the cashier. I ask the dealer where the rest of my chips are, and the dealer tells me that he thought the opponent only called and hadn't moved in. 4 other players at the table confirm hearing him say all-in. Meanwhile, I holler for a 4 to stop my opponent from leaving, but he quickly cashes out and leaves. The foreman checks the security cameras and pays me what I should have won, so it all ends well for me, but I'm curious about a few things. I know that a lot of the responsibility of being aware of what's going on belongs to the players, but it's not my job to put another player's chips in the pot when he bets. I'm not even allowed to touch his chips. One of the reasons I pay the rake is so that the game is run by a professional dealer who counts the chips and makes sure the pot is right. That can't be my responsibility to count each player's bet and confirm that it's correct, can it? I can't touch the chips. How can I count them? The way it was handled by the floor made me feel good about the integrity of the room. I wonder what they will do if my opponent, who I'm told is a regular in the room, shows up again. Confront him, ban him, or just let him go?
All right, here's what Jody says. He says, it is always the player's responsibility to make sure the bets are correct and the pot is right. The dealers facilitate this, but they aren't perfect. Human error can occur at any time, so it's ultimately the player's responsibility to pay attention to what is going on and ask questions when they are unsure. You can always ask the dealer to count the bets in a manner you are comfortable with, and you can ask them to bring the chips into the pot. The situation you are describing is not common, but does happen from time to time. The best answer I can give you is it really isn't anyone's fault, yours or the dealer's, when some low-life angle shooter tries to steal from the game. The room you were playing in did right by you, so I would definitely encourage you to continue to play there. I'd also encourage you to speak with the management there and let them know that they may lose your business if they allow the person who stole from you to continue to play there. If this happened to my room, they would be banned for life.
You know, I totally agree with both sides here. In that weird, it's really weird, but I really do, because I can totally see it from Frank's point where, you know, you're excited, you got pocket aces or whatever it is. You don't expect, you know, you play in the game all day long, and all the pots that you're being dragged your way are all the official correct mounts, and people are putting their chips in because they're ethical people. You know, all of a sudden you got your aces, the money's coming in, and all of a sudden you look over and you're like, oh, wait a minute, where's the rest of my, wait, hey, where's he? And you, all of a sudden, boom, you know, it's too late. And then the same with Jody's saying, yeah, you know, you should be saying, wait, don't do the flop or don't do the turn on the river until that money's in the middle. But it just, you know, the dealers, they like to go real quick, boom, 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 to you know, like ripping the Band-Aid off. You know, that's what they do. And so I could totally agree with both sides here. Ultimately, it is the player's responsibility. It is your responsibility to make sure that money's in the middle before those cards are revealed. But it just, it happens so infrequently that you start to get, you know, desensitized to idiocy. You don't think that they're going to do it, right? So you just let them do it. So I totally agree with both people here. It's kind of weird, but I ultimately, yes, it is Frank's responsibility to make sure that money's there, but I can totally see why he didn't.
Yeah, we published this one in the magazine before we put it on the show and got some feedback from someone that's incredulous at this, that, you know, hey, this is why I pay the rate, which is exactly what Frank said, is that for the dealer to handle the game, it shouldn't be my responsibility. And actually, Jody and he went back and forth, and they agreed to disagree, but I think they had a good understanding of where each other was coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is that, because Jody's very big on always saying it's a player's responsibility, and I think people take that the wrong way. I think what they think he's saying is that the dealer and the house have no responsibility.
And he's not.
And that's not what he's saying. Right. What he's saying is that this is your money, you need to protect it. You've got people there that are supposed to help you protect it, but ultimately, if you're not willing to protect your money, there's only so much they can do. So that's I just saw him a couple weeks ago, and we talked about this. It's just hammering home that there is a player responsibility, and as we mentioned, this came up at the Poker TDA this year, and they added a rule about it. I think what poker rooms are really trying to do is they're not trying to pass the buck, which I think a lot of players are. They're just trying to remind folks, hey, help us help you.
Yeah.
So when you're at the table, know when it's your action. Know what the bet is. Put the right amount in. All the stuff you're supposed to do. And if you do everything you're supposed to do, it's a lot less likely that something's going to happen to you that's not what you want. So in this situation, I mean, obviously, again, the house took care of them. I mean, that's great, you know, because Frank actually called me before all this happened. And he called me back later. He's like, hey, yeah, they checked in the sky. They gave me the chips. That, to me, as Joey said, is phenomenal.
Yeah,
that is a room that it wants to take care of this. I have no doubt that this dealer was probably taken care of somehow, you know, disciplined or whatever, at least talked to about this, because obviously this was a dealer failure. That is the best part of the Joey's, is it's encouraging. Now, obviously, we don't know what happened to this player, but... But yeah, I agree with everyone. If I showed up and that guy is sitting in the game, I would point out, I'm like, hey, what do you got to do to get kicked out of this place?
And not only that, but there's the guy that, you know, you can go get your money from him now because, you know, you paid me, but...
Yeah, exactly.
You can get your, you know, your juice and vig from him or whatever, so...
You know, the other thing I want to say is, does this guy really think he's going to get away with it?
I know. What is he thinking?
I mean, I guess that's why we have shows like World's Dumbest Criminals, right? Because people just don't think. But, I mean... There's nothing smooth about this move here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Zenopod, he calls, and then, oh, the hand's over. You know what? Oh, I'm late for dinner. Let me take my chips and go. You know, it's ridiculous, you know, at this point. So, I think the description is right. Low life angle shooter. It's exactly what this guy is. Yeah. He was just sitting there, and he's like, you know what? I'll take a shot. If I don't win, I'm going to take my ball and go home. and you better catch me, because I'm quick on my feet.
I'm going to call Jody Russell Jerry Maguire now. Help me help you. All right, you know, our crew's interrupted on O'Malley's move, so it's been a while. Let's refresh our memory with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $1-$2 PLO 8 game. The action's been fairly steady all night, and a lot of the players in this game are decent. We're eight-handed with a stack of 275, down 25. We've been at the table for a few hours now. The under-the-gun calls, plus one calls, MP calls, and we look down in the hijack at the Ace of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds, Three of Clubs, Deuce of Clubs. We raise the bet to $8 and immediately regret this decision. All we have is speculation, and there are a ton of players in this game who love to see the flop. Cutoff folds, button folds, small blind folds, big blind calls, under the gun calls, plus one calls, and we are going to a flop with $30 in the pot already. The flop comes down, the King of Hearts, Jack of Spades, Four of Clubs. Okay, we missed this one horribly, but it does get checked around to us. This is why position is so important in this game, and since we raised preflop, we're going to keep up the aggression. We could perhaps represent some big cards that maybe hit this flop. We make it $20 to go. Big blind calls, under the gun folds, and the plus one calls. Not the outcome we were hoping for, but the turn is the Five of Hearts. This is an interesting card. What makes things even more interesting is both players check to us again. Did I mention both players have us covered? So, with $90 in the pot and roughly $250 in front of us, what are we doing here?
Well, I wouldn't have bet on the flop, so I don't want to bet here either. We're on the come for some nut outs, mm-hmm. but our high nut is disguised, so we might still get action on the river bet, which I think is a big point. Our low nuts are likely shared by one or more players, another very big point to consider. So I don't want to put money in now if I'm willing to get half or less of it back if we hit.
Okay, so let's pretend for fun that we don't know anything about poker at all. Zero.
That should be hard for us.
And then we're hearing Scott's statements for the first time. Let's read Scott's statements one more time, but now you don't know anything about poker. What do you think about what this says? I wouldn't have bet on the flop, and I don't want to bet here. We are on the come for some nut outs, but our high nut is disguised, so we might still get action on a river bet, and our low nuts are likely shared by one or more players. And I don't want to put money in now if I'm only getting half or less.
Oh, man.
All right, so anyway, I still don't have a hand, is how I'd like to say it. So, and the pot is a nice size. I'll check and take a free chance to hit my nut high or nut low. So let's see what happens in part two.
Hello again. We kept up the aggression. We put out a $60 bet and once again only lost one player. With 210 in the pot, the river was beautiful. The 10 of diamonds. Once again, we were checked too and decided to make a bit of a value bet. We put out 100. But unfortunately, our opponent sighed and folded. Ah well, we got quite a bit out of this hand. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, go low. You could unexpectedly back into a high. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, nothing changes here for me. You know, O'Malley's plan got him $60 on the turn that my plan wouldn't have. Mm. But I wonder whether checking the flop and betting out on the betting out on the flop would have gotten us the same or an even better result. And I go back to the hiding, the disguise of the hand.
Right.
I mean, because it's a king jack and then the 10 comes. You know, it's a little bit disguised. It's not completely disguised. It's like a half-ass disguise, you know, kind of like the 16-year-olds that trick-or-treat. But the fact that it is somewhat disguised, because that's what you want to worry about at Omaha. And that's what I was teaching my Omaha class in the last cruise, is it's why you want to bet your draws, because when the draw gets there, people are going to assume that you got it. But if it's a draw that gets there and people don't really see it and they don't think that you would be still in, Then you have the option of not betting because you're still going to get paid off. Ultimately, you want to get paid off on this. So
yeah.
I think O'Malley chose, he's like, I'm going to get my money now betting the draw, which is fine. But there just seemed to be too much danger for me. And not danger so much, but, you know, financial considerations for me not to want to bet there and bet when I hit.
Yeah, I'm glad for O'Malley, but I'm with you. I think I still check, and the reason being now is because I played a lot of PLO on the ship this week, or last week, or whatever, and a lot of my draws didn't get there when I was going crazy, and I need to learn some restraint when I'm playing PLO, because it cost me dearly a couple of times, so I'm glad he got that extra $60, but I probably would have checked like you, so...
Alright, remember it's time for Hand of the Week, so send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons, with timers built right into them. can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Ask about the AnteUp logo version and use code ANTEUP for free shipping. This week's comes from Andrew Craig, and it's a little mix. It's probably a situation, but it's got a little hand of the week flavor to it. It's kind of like Cajun Creole. Don't know which, but you put it in a big pot and enjoy it.
Right? Jambalaya.
All right, so here's what he says. I love the podcast, guys. Keep up the good work. Don't worry, we will. We appreciate that. Thank you. I thought I would share a situation with you from my first trip to Harris Cherokee in North Carolina. And he reminded us that Cherokee happens to use the electronic poker pro tables. Not all, they have live dealers now too, but they still kept those poker pro tables
right.
People that like them. And he says that the poker community seems to despise.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't have a strong opinion either way, but however, because I was on an electric table, I can tell you my statistics for the session. And, you know, this is one of the things that I tell folks. You know, the mechanics of it you may not like, but there's a lot of stuff that you get out of these poker pro tables that you don't get out of live tables. So it's not something that should be immediately dismissed, I think. Mm-hmm. And this is an example of it. You get to track your session, right?
Yep.
So he says, during this session of 1-2 no limit hold'em, I was seeing between 25 and 30% of hands. And of those hands, I saw 20% of the river. And of those I saw to the river, I won 100%. Woo!
Woot.
He says, that's my image. All right, yeah. So now we've got an image established.
Okay.
All right, so here's the hand. He says, I pick up King-King in the cutoff after two limpers. So I guess we'll play it as a hand of the week, even though it's going to end up more like a situation. So.
Okay. So it's 1-2. Generally, we make it 6-10. And we have two limpers. We generally make it probably 15 or 16. So I would probably make it 15 or 20. But I don't know how this table's playing. It's hard for me to... These are always very vague descriptions that they give us. You know, I don't know what the limpers have in front of them. I don't know if I'm trying to trap one of them. I don't know if one of them's notorious for raising when it gets back to them. You know, but generally... I'm making it probably 15 to 20 now because of the two limpers, and it's a 1-2 game.
Okay.
Makes sense.
I like 15. That's what I... Yeah, 15. I would normally, in a 1-2 game, cash game, I'm usually raising 10 to begin with. So, you know, get a couple limpers and make it 15.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it's not like a tournament where you're going to make this 6 or 4.5 if you're using Jonathan Little's thing. I think 10 seems to always be the standard. So, throw a couple more in. All right, well, our hero bets 10, and he says the stack is 235.
Okay.
And he says, it seems like a pretty standard bet to me. $10 seems like the right price with limpers in front and will help define any hands behind me. I'm not so much sure about that in any of the games I play.
Not for me, it wouldn't. You're not going to know what kind of hand I have for $10, that's for sure.
Yeah. But we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
He says, the action folds around to the big blind who has about 170-ish. Not squiggly 170.
Aww.
You know, because I've started using the ish thing, because I got some friends that do ish, so everything is ish now. But
yeah.
On this show, it's squiggly.
It's squiggly.
It's never going to be ish. It's going to be squiggly. All right, it says, in the end of the gun plus one limper calls as well with 400-ish.
Well, you just said it was never going to be ish, and you just said it
again. Well, you know, I'm going to let this guy run. He doesn't know.
All right.
And the next hand that he sends in, it's going to be squiggly, ish.
All right,
it says, both of these players have been very active, so I think both of the ranges are very wide right now after calling.
So there you go. You spelled your own that doesn't narrow the hands, so... Not going to define what they have, so 10's not enough.
And knowing this, then obviously I would have raised more. I mean, obviously I would have done that anyhow.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you got to think about the players behind you. So he says, I assume I would have been re-raised with any premium hands. All right, so there's three of us, right?
Yeah.
And the flop is the King of Hearts, 10 of Hearts, Trey of Diamonds, top set. And our hero says, obviously this is a good flop for me. Says, unexpectedly, the big blind bets out 30, and the limper quickly calls.
So there's about 90 or so in the pot already.
He actually says approximately. So he's doing everything he can to not put a squiggly in his email.
Let's see. That is a draw-heavy board in my estimation. I know the three of diamonds isn't really anything, but two Broadway, two hearts... Yeah, I got guys betting. If they're betting, it sounds like they might be trying to protect or bet a draw. So either way, we've got them. You know, if you raise because they're betting a draw, then you're making them pay, which is what you're supposed to do. If you raise and they're trying to protect a set of threes or a set of tens, you've got all their chips, baby.
Yep.
So I can't see any reason to slow play this at all.
No, absolutely not.
There's 90 in the pot. I got 30 in a caller. I'll make it like 120, 150. and see what they do, because I really want them to pay to hit their hand, and if they have a hand that's worth protecting, they're going to come along, and I'm gonna scoop it. So let's really make them pay.
Okay. He says, I'm pretty sure I need to raise the price out of the draws. You're right there. Mm. He says, but the donk bet confuses me, but not enough to call. I raised 150 total.
That's a good raise.
And he wants to know whether it's a bad raise because the raise leaves him with 75 behind.
He just wants to shove instead? I mean,
I think.
Yeah, I think a shove's too much. I think.
And you don't want to bet less just because it only leaves you 75 behind. You need to make the proper bet here, right? And I'm with you. I think the proper bet is 150 here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because the other thing, too, is it...
I mean, I guess I could raise 100 here, but, you know...
You're on the electronic tables, too. You know, so it's not like they see a stack and say, well, why is he out there a little bit left? It's kind of a number, so it might not hurt you either. So I want to make the right bet, not the one that looks weird. You know, I want to make the right bet. I think between 120 and 150 is the right bet.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, 100 is 3.5x the bet. I mean, obviously, we got that limper in between, so you got to account for that. But that 100 is not a terrible bet, I don't think.
No.
The problem with the 150, though, is I do want action here, right?
Yeah.
I want to draw to call with the wrong odds.
Right.
And fill this pot up.
Right.
You know, exactly. Because even if they get there, they've made a mistake and I win even though I lose. You know, I'm not really. I don't want to shut down here. This is one of these hands where if that heart gets there and we lose, that bunch of people are like, I should have raised more to protect my hand. No, that's wrong.
No.
I mean, here I want to raise the right amount to get more money out of this hand.
Well, let's do the math then. Okay, so there's 90 in a pot. If you put 100 in, it would only be 70 for them to win 190.
Okay.
That's almost 3-1 on their money for a flush draw. So it's not enough money.
So it's not enough. Yep.
So you want to make it 150 or so. Okay. You, plus, it's that limper, that extra guy who calls, that really makes you want to bet more.
Yep.
So I like the 150 bet. I mean, maybe 130 or whatever, but I like the 150 bet, and I'm not going to second-guess it. And if the heart gets there, I'm still putting 75 in. Because I still have 10 outs to win if I'm beat at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a perfect scenario because when we had 75 behind, there's nothing that could come that we're going to fold.
Right.
And so the good thing is we don't have a decision left the rest of this hand.
Yep.
You know?
And they know that too, that there's no way you're folding for 75, so I'm not going to steal it for 75.
Yep, exactly.
So, yeah, I like that bet.
All right. So he says, obviously the raise leaves him 75 behind. He says, I'm happy when the big blind folds. But the limper calls after a slight hesitation. So I think that's actually a good scenario.
Sure.
One caller. I don't want two in there. Although I guess at this point, I do want two in. You know, because we made a big bet. If they're drawing, they made a bad call. At least the first one would have.
Right. No, absolutely right. And you always want to have fewer cards going up against you. And, you know, you could have been up against two draws right there. Now you're only up against one. And it could be a straight draw rather than a hard draw. So, you know, and if a hard draw gets there, you still have your outs. So... You know, we're in good position now. We're only up against one player. That's a good thing.
Okay. The turn is the 7 of hearts. So our board is king of hearts, 10 of hearts, tray of diamonds, 7 of hearts. So of course the heart gets there. And our hero says, I managed not to groan audibly when the limper instantly pushes all in. Obviously he has us covered. So we are put to the test. Not that we think it's much of a test, I think, right?
Yeah, no, we agreed earlier that there was nothing that's going to make us fold anyway. So even if he does have the hearts, we have the redraw. And, you know, for 75 to win, what is it, 390? I can't fold.
No, of course not.
So, yeah, it's there's no decision here. And, yeah, you may be upset the heart got there, but he might not even be on a heart draw. Who knows? And he may have the smaller set than you and still protecting his hand or whatever. So I'm fine with just calling and seeing what happens.
Okay. He says, in the end, I didn't think that he had a set, so he either hit his draw or was drawing with another heart in his hand, like ace of hearts, king of spades. So he wants to know whether that's a fair assumption.
I don't think that's a fair assumption. I don't think someone, with this kind of money out there, I don't think somebody's doing it with one pair and a hope to a redraw. You know what I mean? I don't think he would have called 150 on one pair on that flop.
Yeah. So the first half was either he hit his draw, which seems the most logical.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Assumption. I don't know whether somebody's going to put us to a test if they don't really have a made hand.
Yeah. It's tough to think that he would have the ace of hearts in his hand right now and not another heart.
Right.
Because that's just one pair, and one pair is not going to be putting it
in. Yeah, because we raised pre-flop, and then we raised on the flop.
Yeah. I think that turn bet you know, that big bet before the turn, I mean, is the... I don't know if somebody's doing that with Ace-King. But
right.
But anyway, yeah, it seems like either his guy's got his flush already, or he's got a smaller set than us and we're golden, so that's what it feels like.
Okay. He says, I figured that I'd bet enough on the turn to price out all but the biggest draws, like Queen of Hearts, Jack of Hearts, and if he hit his hand, then I still have full house outs. Additionally, my bet on the turn committed me to the hand. See? Look at it. It's mm-hmm. perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The pot is 465, and I need 75 to call. The pot odds are just too good. I call. Well played, sir. The limper turns over Queen of Clubs, Jack of Hearts, and I manage to fade his straight outs and win the pot. So here comes the situation now. He says, with the stack size being what it was, I'm pretty happy with how the hand played out. But my question is this. If I had a stack of 500 instead of 235, would this have been a fold?
Jeez. So in other words, if he's saying that if he had more to lose...
Yeah, I guess what he's saying is, obviously, as we all discussed, it's a no-brainer here at 75. You know, you got a call, and you knew that before. But if you were deeper stacked, and you think 500, but let's say, you know, let's say you had this guy covered, so, you know, when he started with the end of the gun, started with 400-ish, so, I don't know, 180, so it'd be about $200 a call rather than 75.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think you fold there. You still have outs to the nuts. You still have a king and any other card to pair the board, and this is a big pot now, you know, and the guy could just be representing, you know. I don't think so. I don't think so. I've watched enough cash games on TV that guys will go to the, and professionals that are beyond our comprehension, go to the mat with their set no matter what gets there, and still call. I've seen guys do it with pocket aces after an incredibly draw heavy board and still go to the mat and call off all their chips because they were right. They thought somebody was just representing, and they weren't. So in this case, I think I still call with my set, no matter what the outs are. I mean, or what the bet is, I mean. I think. I guess I'd have to be in that position. I can't fold top set.
Well, I mean, I guess you got to ask, what is your opponent betting at this point? You've been raising the entire time, right?
Right.
And so if he got there with the hearts... Don't you think that he would let you take another shot? Or why would you, and or at least a smaller bet that you had to call, why would he put you to a test here if he's got the flush? Because he wouldn't think that you had the flush, right? So it the bet didn't make any sense to me. And it wouldn't make any sense to me whether I had 500 or 200 in front of me. Now, obviously, it's tougher to call off more on that in case the guy's a crafty player and trapped us with us thinking that. But it didn't make any sense for him to bet here. And I'd go back to it totally made absolutely no sense to this player to bet with the situation that we're in here. Because, I mean, you said it right away, and this is what I remember saying or writing back to Andrew when he wrote in, is that his opponent played this hand terribly.
Yeah.
Because he should have known right away when you bet the 150 that you're committed to this hand. And there's absolutely no reason he should have bet... that put you all in on the river because he knew you were going to call anyhow and he didn't have a made hand. Best thing he could have done is just checked and hoped that you got scared and checked behind and he got a free card to hit his hand because you're not going anywhere. So he made the mistake here. So that's the question now, is if you get more, then you could make him fold here.
The only thing, if we back up with what you had said, you'd asked a question before about what hand can this guy have. The only hand that I would think would do that would do it properly, because this guy played it horribly.
Right.
But if he's playing decent poker, is if he had baby hearts.
Right.
And he's trying to protect it and think that you have ace of hearts. He has the hand that he was suggesting earlier, ace of hearts, king of spades.
Yeah.
You know, and that now you've got top pair, top kicker, but you're also top nut draw to the flush. You know, so he's trying everything he can to protect his hand with 7-5 or 6-5 of hearts in his hand. So... because somebody like that would call $10 preflop, then make the heart draw, and then come around for the whole thing. And then now if you had something like 6-5 of hearts, and you got there on the turn, you know what I mean? Now you want to protect your hand. So that's the only hand that I can see that would bet out into us properly in that situation when you had 500 instead of 235 or whatever. But other than that, yeah, why not let us keep betting and sort of walk the dog? because you're not putting.
But even then, in that scenario, maybe this makes me a weaker player. But even in that scenario, you know, I've got the outs. I don't want to play the outs. I'm hoping he doesn't have the hearts, but I don't think I want to be the guy that gets pushed off of the pot every time the flush draw gets there.
Right.
You know, particularly when I have this strong of a hand, I want to play back from time to time and let him know that you can't push me around when you get those baby hearts. So I'm willing to take the chance in that situation that he does have the baby hearts because I still got the backup if I need it. And if I'm wrong about what he has and he turns up the hand like this, then great. Then I just made a huge hero call. You know, I don't want to be stuck in these situations four times a night because that's big money there. But I also don't want to be scared.
No, I agree. I you know, I mean, it's hard to just go all the way back, reverse, and start with 500 and start the hand all over again. But I agree with you. I think that, and we had the outs. You know, I mean, we still had the outs in case it. We needed him, so this is a hand that's just too strong for me to let go, knowing that it's a game of incomplete information. He could be playing that angle on me and just, as, you know, representing rather than actually having. So you throw that into the factor in the mix, and I'm making a call there, I think, no matter what the price is.
Cool.
All right, another good hand, another good show. Thanks for everybody for contributing. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.